We're in Deuteronomy. If you would turn there, please. We're going to start with about chapter 12 and try to get as far as chapter 17. We're going to continue in the overview, if you will, as we have been doing, knowing that Moses is continuing to restate the law for the new generation that's moving on in to the promised land. Have you given much thought lately to justice? What does justice mean to you? You see court TV, you see movies on TV all the time, and justice is supposed to prevail. If you've ever been done dirty or done wrong, you want to see justice done. But what does justice mean? What does justice, true justice, really mean to you? A very, very simple definition. Wouldn't a simple definition be just that the things that are right would be right and the things that are wrong would be wrong? But I want you to think about that. We're always looking for justice for our side of things. But is that really justice? When you're in the middle of a disagreement, you have a perspective, don't you? If you get a dirty deal at a car dealership, if you get a dirty deal anywhere, you have a perspective. You see things a certain way. And by the way, at the time, you see them very clearly, don't you? At least from your perspective. And you're absolutely sure what justice would be. The right thing that should be done. The only problem is the person on the other side of this argument sees it differently than you do. And they see it absolutely clearly. They see who's right, they see who's wrong. And if they could execute judgment, it may be to execute you. So, what's right? And what's wrong? Who can we trust true judgment to? Now we trust it to the courts to some degree. But it's amazing Christians find themselves often in pagan courts. And as we saw from the glove not fitting, that justice can be twisted a bit, can't it? Depending on whether or not you can hire enough lawyer, if you can lawyer up enough, sometimes justice is not justice at all. Sometimes justice can be bought. Here's my point. In order to be just, you have to be right. In order to be right, you got to be righteous. And there's none righteous. Not one. So the only one that's ever claimed to be and proven to be righteous is Jesus Christ, is God. So therefore, justice is really in His hands. He's the only one who can be fair. He's the only one who can be just. Now, sometimes that doesn't appeal to the flesh as much as it does taking justice in our own hands. If justice is in our own hands, we can get our pound of flesh. If we turn justice over to God, He's fair to everybody because He's righteous. So therefore, even someone we might think should get a dirty deal, God's still just and fair to them also. So here's my point. The only place we're really safe is in God's hands. The only place where justice is executed is in God's hands. So therefore, our will, our desire, our determination, our opinion, our feelings, it all has to come back to the Lord. It has to be placed in His hands in order for true justice to be done. Because sometimes even when you extract your pound of flesh, when it's all over with and you realize what you've done, it's not nearly as satisfying as you thought it was going to be. I hope to bring that all back into perspective after we cover all these chapters tonight. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 12. Look at verses 1 and 4. Now, guys, 1 through 4. Guys, you know that he's already pretty much made it clear. Here's the path of blessing. These things that you need to do. If you do these things, it's the blessing. But by the same token, therein lies the curse. The blessing is in doing what I've asked you to do. The curse is in not doing the things that I ask you to do. So if you look at Deuteronomy 12, verses 1 through 4, he says, "These are the statutes and the judgments which you shall carefully observe in the land, which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you to possess as long as you live on the earth. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations whom you shall dispossess serve their gods. On the high mountains and on the hills and under every green tree, you shall tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars, burn their asherim with fire, and you shall cut down the engraved images of their gods and obliterate their name from that place." And here it is. "And you shall not act like this towards the Lord your God." Now, we read that, and I think that any Christian with some desire to serve God, we go, "Well, I would never do that. You know, I would never set up the high places. I would never go to the hills or the mountains and create an altar and bow down and worship false gods." But, you know, guys, I want you to put it into a different perspective. Our gods are different these days. Just as dead, just as meaningless, just as helpless, but we're still creating them. We have our cars. We have our houses. We have our properties. We have our games. We have our things. Now, the things in and of themselves may not be a god, but what we do with them, the time we spend with them, the way they take a priority in our life, could very well be our gods. We could find ourselves many times bowing down to our gods. And just because society has said this is acceptable doesn't mean that they're not gods. Just because everyone else has a god like it in their home, hooked up to their TV, doesn't mean that it's not a god. It may be the TV. It may be the car. Anything that gets our time and attention over the Lord can be a god. But I think if you push all the things aside, the one god that's worshipped the most is ourselves. Now, you might think, "Well, I don't worship myself." Well, how about your opinion? Are you right all the time? Oh, no, I've been wrong once or twice, but I'm right most of the time. You see, sometimes we can get into a setting to where we're just, our opinion matters so much that we over-evaluate ourselves so much that it's really an act of self-worship. Wanting my will, wanting my way, wanting life to be the way I want it to be, and I command and demand everyone around me to bow. Am I not indeed setting myself up as some kind of a god? Now, what happens is when we find ourselves in that spot, we find ourselves opposing God. You know, we can't compete with him on that era, in that area. There's only one Messiah suit, and it doesn't fit us. So we're going to find the biggest majority of our life in turmoil, because there's very few people who are going to really want to bow down and worship us. So if we find ourselves in that spot, there's always going to be this resistance in our life, because we're going to find people not wanting to do the things we want them to do. Here's the command: you shall not act like this towards your God. I believe that that's still in place. We shall not act like this towards our God. We have to be careful all the time, guys. Anything in our life that it's used by us and we're not used by it. In other words, we can put it down at any given time and spend time with the Lord. If we can't put it down, if we're constantly involved with it, and it sucks away every bit of life we have in the Lord, it's probably become too important to us. And we probably need a break from it. Well, God has told them he's going to give them victory over their enemies. When they come in there, they got to remove all the places of pagan worship along with the false gods so that this does not happen to them. Look at verse 29 in chapter 12. When the Lord your God cuts off before you the nations which you are going in to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, here it is, beware that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods, that I may also do, or that I might do likewise? You shall not behave thus towards the Lord your God, for every abominable act which the Lord hates, they have done for their gods. For they have even burned their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. Whatever I command you, you shall be careful to do. You shall not add to or take away from this. So remember last week when we said these nations are in judgment. They're in God's judgment. They have earned God's judgment. They have pretty much sealed their own fate. Verse 31, because they've committed just about every act possible. And God has worked and tried to work and tried to work in their life. Now Israel is going to become judgment in their nation. God is going to use Israel to judge them for these sins. Now, in the next chapter, we're going to see just exactly how serious God is about this. Now, keep in mind, God loves His children. So these things that He's cautioning us about, cautioning Israel about, it's out of His love. He's saying, been there, done that, bought the shirt. I know what's going on here. I am God, and I know what's going to happen to you if you just don't follow this. Okay, look at verses 1 through 11 in chapter 13. If a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises among you and gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign of the wonder comes true, concerning which he spoke to you, saying, let us go after other gods whom you have not known, and let us serve them. You shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to find out if you will love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul. Now remember, Satan tests to destroy. God tests to strengthen. It can be the same trial. It can be the same set of circumstances. And as we saw from Job, sometimes God will allow these tests in your life so that you can find out what kind of man or woman you are. So you can find out what priority God has in your life. To find out if you have idols in your life that are weakening your walk in the Lord. God means that for good. He means that to strengthen you, to give you a stronger back, so to speak. Satan will use that same trial to get you and I to doubt, to fear, to yell and scream and kick and swear and everything else, and doubt our God. The very same trial. Here we see that he's saying, the Lord your God is testing you to find out if you will love him with all of your heart and with all of your soul. Let me ask you this question. Whatever trial you find yourself in, how are you doing in the middle of the test? You know, we're all going to go kind of going, not too good. Sometimes we don't, do we? Sometimes you get through it and you're going, man, I'm failing at this miserably. And then we beat ourselves up because we're going, I should know better than this. I should be able to stand in this. I should be able to... How are you doing in the midst of your trial? Are you able to say, hey, my God is able to supply my needs according to his riches and glory. I can get through this. Are we standing as Christian men and women, holding on to the faith and the promises of God? Or are we running, kicking, and screaming like little girls? Sorry, little girls. I didn't mean to offend any little girls in my view. But you know what I'm saying. Don't we all want to come through those trials and say, hey, I didn't do it perfectly, but I made it through with some dignity. Verse 4, you shall follow the Lord your God and fear him, and you shall keep his commandments and listen to his voice, serve him and cling to him. But that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death because he has counseled rebellion amongst the Lord your God, who brought you from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery to seduce you away, to seduce you from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk, so you shall purge the evil that's among you. Now, guys, the way I relate this is there's lots of counselors out there. Who are you getting your counsel from? There's lots of counselors out there. Anywhere from a spouse to a drunk across the bar, who by the way, is very quick to give you marriage counseling. I don't know if you know that, but they've been married and divorced 25 times, but they're quick to give you marriage counseling and tell you how to run the marriage. Or the buddy at work, or the girlfriend at work, or there's lots of counselors out there, but who are we listening to? Who are we getting our advice from? The dreamer of dreams, the one that's not even walking with the Lord, or possibly the one that's say that they're a Christian, but they're not even walking in the ways of God. So we're getting counsel from them and running with it, and where do you think it's going to lead us? It's not going to lead us to justice. Only if they lead us to Jesus, it's going to lead us to justice. And I can tell you this, there's no shortcuts. They're just rabbit trails. You might think it's a shortcut, but it's just going to add another year to the 40-year journey. That's all that's going to happen. It's not a shortcut. Verse 6, if your brother, your mother's son, or your son or your daughter, or the wife you cherish, or your friend who is your own soul, entices you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, whom neither you nor your fathers have known, of the gods of the people who are around you, near or far from you, from one end of the earth to the other end, you shall not yield to him or listen to him, and your eyes shall not pity him, nor shall you spare or conceal him, but you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first against him and put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. So you shall stone him to death because he has sought to seduce you from the Lord your God and brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. Now, don't go out and stone your husband or your wife tonight saying, you've tripped me up, man. I got biblical justification to take you out and stone you to death. That's not quite the point, is it? But I tell you what, we ought to be almost as sincere when we have our buddies and our friends give us bad counsel. We need to reject it like the plague. If it's not leading us back to Jesus, and I'll tell you, the counsel that leads us back to Jesus is not always pleasant. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's difficult. It is bruising to the ego and destroys the pride. And sometimes it is just flat out difficult, but it's always the right path because it's the only place where justice exists. So, not much room for interpretation or misinterpretation here, is there? He's saying, look, it's what I want you to do. And when you find people that are out there counseling you to do something else and chase these foreign gods, you need to reject it with all that is in you, with everything that you've got, even for them, to the point of taking them out and stoning them to death. Verse 11 tells us why. Then all of Israel will hear and be afraid and will never again do such a wicked thing amongst you. Now, I'm not going to get into capital punishment, the death penalty, but one thing you do have to say about the death penalty, it is a deterrent. If you do this, you die. I don't think I'll do that. If you do this, you're going to get your hand spanked. Well, I think I might try it. He's just saying here, you do what I've asked you to do, you follow it through. It's a testimony to the rest of the people. Now, I want you to, he's going to take a little bit of a turn here. He's also instructing them to be an active part of God's economy. Now, what I mean by that is that God had a system. He had set that system up to keep the temple functioning and the priests officiating in the temple, because in the priests and in the temple, they had this process of repentance and forgiveness. Jesus Christ came and fulfilled all of that, so there's no more need for sacrifices and the shedding of blood. Jesus shed his blood once and for all for the sins of mankind. But at this point in time, it was the flow of spiritual economy. It was God's economy, and the Lord wanted them to be an active part of it. It was their spiritual social life, if you will. Look at verse 22 of chapter 14. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year. Tithe in this Old Testament sense means a tenth part. Verse 23, you shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God at the place where he chooses to establish his name, the tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, the firstborn of your herd, of your flock, so that you may learn to fear. Now, that fear means to love and respect and honor. It's a reverential fear that you might learn to love and respect and honor the Lord your God always. If the distance is too great for you and you're not able to bring the tithe, since the place where the Lord your God chooses to set his name is too far from you when the Lord your God blesses you. In other words, if the temple and the services and all that's going on is too far from where you're conducting life, then here's what you can do. Then you shall exchange it for money and bind the money in your hand and go to the place where the Lord your God chooses. You may spend the money for whatever your heart desires, oxen, sheep, wine, strong drink, whatever your heart desires, and there you shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice, you and your household. Also, you shall not neglect the Levite who is in your town, for he has no portion or inheritance amongst you. At the end of every third year, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in that year, and you shall deposit it in your town. The Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance among you, and the alien and the orphan and the widow who are in your town shall come, and they shall eat and be satisfied in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the works of your hands which you do. So, do you guys see the cycle of blessing? God has this cycle of blessing going on. He says, I will bless you, and I will bless your obedience, and I will bless your faithfulness to me. And in return for that, out of that abundance of the blessing that I'm giving to you, I want you to bless me back, and I want you to be a blessing to the priests, and I want you to be a blessing to the widows, and I want you to be a blessing to the orphans. And if you do this, the cycle will continue. I will continue to bless, you will continue to bless me, you will continue to bless the Levites, which have no inheritance, and you'll bring your offerings to the priests. The priests will be able to stay in full-time service in the temple, and the cycle keeps going. And the spiritual life of the people stays intact. And as long as the spiritual life of the people stays intact, there will be blessing. But guess what? When something comes in and stops the cycle, the blessing gets diminished. I am convinced it's never God that breaks the cycle. It's us. We break the cycle at some point. I'll explain that a little bit more as we go on. Chapter 15 deals with the sabbatic year of releasing everyone's debt every 7 years. But they are reminded that if they will just do what the Lord has commanded them, they won't be poor. Now, the sabbatic year, every 7 years, what it was is their kinsmen were relieved of any debts that they might have had. In other words, paid in full. The end of 7 years, paid in full. Don't owe me anything anymore. Look at chapter 15, verses 1 through 6. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. This is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbors. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. From a foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever of yours is with your brother. However, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land, and the Lord your God that the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. If only you will listen obediently to the voice of the Lord, to observe carefully all the commandments which I'm commanding you today, for the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not be a borrower, and you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. Now, how cool would that be? Let's bring it down from the nations just to our own homes. In our own lives, wouldn't it be cool to never be a borrower and always be a lender? Wouldn't it be nice to not have a debt on your home? Wouldn't it be nice not to have a debt on your car? Wouldn't it be nice to not be in debt at all, but to be so blessed that you were the one that was lending out to other people? That's what God's promising them. He's saying, if you keep the cycle running, if you keep the cycle flowing, if you keep the cycle going, I will bless you so much that you will have an abundance. You will not be in debt, but you will be the ones that are giving it away. But I want you to notice, he is saying that they were to be generous out of this blessing. Now, guys, we know that not everyone's going to listen to the Lord, right? Can't we pretty much conclude that in any given tonight, in this teaching, some of us are going to hear it. Some of us are going to go, hey, that's for me. And then we're going to go home and say, God, what is it that you want me to change? And some of us are going to go, I sure hope they heard this. And I sure hope my wife heard it. Sure hope my husband heard it. I sure hope somebody gets this. So some are going to get it and some are not going to get it. He knows that not every one of them is going to get it. So there's going to be poor amongst them. But they are to be generous, amongst the poor. Look at verse 11. For the poor will never cease to be in your land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy, and to your poor in the land. So on one hand, he says, if you do what you're supposed to do, you won't be poor. But there's going to be some that are just not, they're simply not going to do what they're supposed to do. So there's going to be poor amongst you. And he says, be generous to the poor. Now, without getting into this whole subject of giving, because this is not a subject about giving, but I will say this, as Christians, we're supposed to be givers. I think as Christians, we're not supposed to always be living behind the eight ball. We're supposed to be in front of it. I still believe, even though this is Old Testament application, I still believe if we put the God of justice in our life and we love Him thoroughly and we love Him completely, He is... all of our soul, all of our strength, all of our mind, I still believe God will shower His blessings. I believe God will pour forth His blessings. And I believe that as He pours forth those blessings, if we in turn are generous people, that blessing just keeps flowing. I honestly believe that that happens. Because God is looking for people that He can shower His blessing upon who will not hold it all. I believe that He's looking for people that if He showers His blessing upon them, they keep it flowing. And I believe when He finds someone like that, He just keeps pouring it on because He knows that that blessing is going to continue to go into the hands of His people. Okay, guys, let's move on along. Chapter 16, He reminds them to keep the Feast of the Passover, the Feast of Weeks, Feast of Booths, and then He reminds them to keep the peace. Now, remember, we talked about peace. They were to be honest. They were to be fair to everyone. Let me ask you this. Are you fair? Are you a fair person? Well, what do you mean, Pastor? Are you a fair person? If you do a job and you have a guy that helps you, are you fair to pay him his fair share? Or are you looking for a way to keep an extra buck? I mean, is there something inside that just kicks in and goes, well, you know, I could justify this or I could justify that and I really did do more? Or is there just a fairness about you? When you get pulled over by a cop and you're doing 65 and a 50, do you go, I blew it. I was wrong. I deserve the ticket. Or you're going, I can't believe these stupid cops. You know, they just stopping little old ladies on the way home from work instead of out there busting the real criminals. Well, if it says 50, you're doing 65, you are a real criminal. We are, you know, we've become a criminal. Is there a sense of fairness? When you get in the middle of a disagreement or an argument and you have a chance to catch your breath, do you say, I'm not always right? But I am most of the time. No. And do, are you able to say, you know what, I could be wrong here. Nah, couldn't be. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. My argument's only as good as the facts, and the facts are only as good as what I've collected. Right? You guys that have been with me a while, you've heard me use that illustration where you're looking for a big screen TV, or you're looking for a car, or you're looking for something, and you search the paper week after week after week after week after week, and you're determined to get the best price you can get. You watch and you watch and you watch, and they never go on sale. And then all of a sudden, they go on sale. It's the lowest price it's been in 5 years, and you're convinced this is the best deal you can possibly get. You go out and buy it. Based on all of your research, based on all of your facts, this is the best deal. You would stand and argue with anyone if they said you could get a better deal. You say, no, you can't. I've watched this. Next Sunday, you get up and you open the paper, and guess what? It's on sale for $50 cheaper than what you bought it for. So you see, any decision is only as good as the facts. So there's always a possibility that you're wrong. There's always a possibility you didn't gather all of the facts. Are we fair? That's why we got to leave justice in the hands of God. That's why we can't substitute His laws for our own. That's why we can't substitute His grace and mercy for our own. That's why we can't substitute His guidelines for our own. Look at verse 18 of chapter 16. You shall appoint for yourself judges and officers in all of your towns which the Lord your God is giving you according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. Righteous judgment. You shall not distort justice. You shall not be partial, and you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Justice and only justice you shall pursue, that you may live and possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Now, this is a very interesting and very brilliant concept, isn't it? Hello? Who's there? Okay. You might want to hit the off switch on that. Okay, look at the concept, okay? Not only is it brilliant, not only is it 100% accurate and 100% good, if the judges and if the priests are doing, hold on here, if they're doing exactly what God has commanded them to do, then it can be expected of the people to be accountable for the sentencing that's handed down by those judges and by those priests, right? If the priests and the judges are doing exactly what God has told them to do, then you can be sure that the sentencing that they give is right and just. Look at verse 9. So you shall, chapter 17, verse 9. So you shall come to the Levitical priest or the judge who is in office in those days, and you shall inquire of them, and they shall declare to you the verdict of the case. You shall do according to the terms of the verdict which they declare to you from that place which the Lord chooses, and you shall be careful to observe according to all that they teach you, according to the terms of the law which they teach you, and according to the verdict which they tell you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside from the word which they declare to you to the right or to the left. The man who acts presumptuously by not listening to the priest who stands there to serve the Lord your God, nor to the judge, that man must die. Thus you shall purge the evil from Israel. This is how the Lord intended for this Old Testament nation of Israel to function. Now, guys, this is the most important part of the whole teaching. And that is, I pray that you can see that God is at the head of all of this. They didn't come up with their own laws. They didn't come up with their own ideas. They didn't come up with their own way to run things. God came up with His laws. All they had to do was simply carry them out. That's all they had to do. Just carry them out and you will have the blessings. It is always better to get your direction straight from God than from anyone else. Let me say this. In our lives, if you and I are getting our directions from God, there will be blessing in our life. If we're getting our direction from anybody else, we're going to take some rabbit trails. If a husband is getting his direction from God, he's going to be able to lead his family the way God would want him to lead his family. If a wife is getting her direction from God, she's going to be able to support and lead her family the way God would want her to support and lead her family. If you and I are getting our direction from God for our jobs, maybe tough at times, but we're going to be able to stand in the things of the Lord. Where we get in trouble is we begin to rewrite the laws. Well, I don't want to do that. Can I just bend it a little bit? I don't want to go 55. That's ridiculous. Look at, you know, this street will bear 65. So I substitute the law for my own opinion and I violate it. It's the same thing with the way we run our families and the way we run our life. God has said, here's the path of blessing. And sometimes we look at those and go, but I don't want to do those things. I want a shortcut. I want to do it different than that. And God says, well, you surely can. But understand, it's one more year in the wilderness. You can surely alter them and you can surely change them, but life is just going to be so much harder. Why would you want to do that? Well, because I just do, okay? Okay. And go ahead. Okay, we're going to close. I want you to go to Deuteronomy 17, 14. When you enter the land, which the Lord God gives you and you possess it to live in it, and you say, I will set a king over me, like all the other nations who are around me. You know why God said that? Because that's exactly what they did. When they came into the land, they didn't like doing it the way God had told them to do it. So they said, let's have a king. We don't like the judges. We don't like the priests. We want to be modernized like the rest of the nations. All the other nations have a king. Why can't we have a king? We want a king. So God knows that this is going to happen. I want to read something to you out of 1 Samuel chapter 8. Verses 1 through 8. And it came about when Samuel was old that he appointed his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and his name of his second was Abijah. And they were judging in Beersheba. His sons, however, did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after dishonest gain and took bribes and perverted justice, even a good man. Then all of the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all of the other nations. But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, Samuel, go ahead and listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you. Here it is. They have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day that I brought them up from Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so that they are doing this to you also. Guess who that king was? King Saul. And you know Saul, eventually rejected by the Lord for perverting justice. And eventually that kingdom was turned over to David, because he was a man after God's own heart. Not a perfect man, but a man after God's own heart. You'll also see in Deuteronomy chapter 17, 16 through 20, it talks about these kings. They're not supposed to add horses to themselves. He gives several rules for the kings because they were kings. After all, a king can do whatever he wants, can he? He can send people out to be killed and take their wives, and he can do just about anything he wants. He's got the riches, he's got the power, he's got the strength. Here's the point. They had a good situation because God said, I will be your God. And they said, no, we don't like that. We want a king. Let me ask this question in closing. What have we displaced God with? Have we displaced God with another king? Are we still committed to the things of God, even if they hurt sometimes? Are we still committed to walking the way the Lord wants us to, even if we got to back up a little bit, correct the mistakes, and move forward? Even if we have to be a little embarrassed, even if we have to go back to our wife or our husband or our children, apologize and say, you know what, I've blown it. And I'm sorry. But as for me and my house, from this day forward, I'm going to serve God. Sometimes we got to do that. Sometimes we got to back up. Sometimes we got to go backward to go forward. But I'll tell you this, our nature, our human nature is going to want to be to substitute God's economy with another king. And it looks so good at the beginning. You guys remember Saul was head and shoulders above everybody else. He looked like a king. The wrong guy. It always looks so right. It always seems so right at the time. And after all the other nations are doing it. They all have kings. But God's saying, that's not what I want for you. I want to be your God. I want to hear your heartbeat. I want you to hear my heartbeat. I want you to spend time with me and seek me in the morning and hear my voice say to you, be still and know that I'm God. I'll take care of you. I'll take care of your family. I'll take care of these things. We'll work them out together. I'll be there for you. Just stay close to me. God desires so much for, I believe, for us men to be men. And the hardest thing we've got going against us is it's not at all what this world paints a man to be. We fall for the Sauls and miss the Davids. So the only way we can do it right, the only way we can be men and women of justice is to hang on to Jesus. He gives us the right answer in the right time and the right season. I have to remind myself of this all the time. I hope you guys know I never preach at you. I preach at me. God always spanks me first. And I have to remind myself on a day-to-day basis because it's so easy to lose sight of how simple it is. Humbling, yes, but simple. God just wants me to empty myself and fill it with Him. He's already got the victory. He's already won. He's already beat the snot out of Satan. Eternal life is already ours. So all we have to do is empty ourselves and fill it up with God. But when I'm God, that's not easy to do, is it? My opinion doesn't matter unless it's God's. My feelings don't matter unless they're God's. My heart doesn't matter unless they're God's. And my judgment, unless it's God's, is going to be perverted. Let's pray.